Hello, welcome back to another episode of Transparent Yoga and Everyday Life. I'm sitting here with Molly Lynn and Kenny, and we're at the Samaria Center, but we're about to hear a podcast, the last podcast from the 2013 India trip. Also, this is my last podcast as audio producer, but it's been a really awesome adventure with Molly and even Dan in the beginning, and I'm just really glad to have been part of it. I'm excited to see where Molly takes the podcast in the future. So before we hear the podcast, Molly, I want to know if you could just describe a little bit of sort of what the setting is of this last talk.
Yeah, thanks, Emily. So before I even jump into that, I want to just thank you so much for all of your help and your encouragement and everything that you've done for me on the podcast over the past couple of years, not just logistically and practically, but also all of the knowledge that you've imparted, all the wisdom and insight you've given me about how to do the podcast and how to present. And I know I'm not the only one that has benefited from that. So thank you so much. And also just a reminder for me and for all of us of just how important our Samaria Center community is, and that it's always people from the community that either will give me an idea, bring me an idea and help me to bring it to fruition, or maybe I'm the one that has the idea, but I need help in bringing it to fruition. And 100%, 108% of the time, people like you have shown up to show your support and to show how much the Samaria Center and our mission means to you. So thank you so much for that too. I think you're an awesome model as a person from the community stepping up and making something into reality. So thank you.
You're welcome. And it was my pleasure.
And so then this podcast, it's the last of the podcasts that we recorded in India. And I know it's been a while since we put out the last podcast. So I also want to assure the listeners that you are helping me to make sure that we will continue the podcast. We're going to start with the target of having it monthly instead of bimonthly, is that right? Twice monthly? Because that seems to just make it easier that way. If we end up having two, then it can be an extra gift, but at least I can definitely commit to one. So I look forward to continuing, and for all of you listeners to go ahead and send me messages on my Facebook page, Molly Lanning Kenny, and let me know what kinds of topics you're interested in, and I'll continue to speak on those. So this is the last one that we recorded in India in 2013. I guess this would also be a good time for me to mention that we have the dates of our 2014 India pilgrimage set up again. So we're going from February 2nd to February 15th, and we're beginning as we did last year, starting in South India and touring and making pilgrimages to various temples, and then we'll head up towards Delhi and up to Rishikesh, where we'll spend several days in an ashram in Rishikesh, and then we'll end up on Valentine's Day at the Taj Mahal. So anyone who's interested in actually being present for the next set of podcasts that will be recorded in India, let us know about that too. This is going to be talking about the Sahasrara Chakra. That's the crown chakra, or the seventh chakra. And this was the last one that we did right before we were all getting ready to disperse. We were in Kerala, and we were going to spend one night on a houseboat together as the last night of our trip together, and then everybody was going to be dispersing to various places. So I made sure that everybody was up, ready to practice by 7 a.m. So if people sound a little sleepy or froggy, that's why. Although I guess that also reveals that even as yogis, we don't always get up right at the crack of dawn or beforehand to meditate. So I think it was tough for all of us to get up by 7. But here we are talking about the crown chakra.
Could you intro the Nirvana Shatakam?
Oh, yeah, of course. So the Nirvana Shatakam, or also called the Atma Shatakam, is a poem that I've been chanting. Really, I would actually call it my primary practice, my primary yogic practice over about the past 3 years. And it is the quintessential poem sort of espousing the idea of non-dualism, of Advaita Vedanta. So that's me singing the Atma Shatakam. If you want to learn this, I have actually since, or I guess prior to this podcast, I made a recording of this when I was with my students in Germany, and people can find that on YouTube, and then you can watch some of the India pictures, you can listen to the Atma Shatakam, and then it actually has the words transliterated, so you can also read along and learn it yourself.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So here you go.
Mano buddhi ahamkara chitani nah Nacha shota jive, nacha grana netre, nacha vyoma bhumir, na tejo navayu, chetananda rupa, shivoham shivoham. Na cha prana sasya nava pancha vayu nava sapta dhatu nava pancha kosha nava kpani padam na cho basta payu Chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham na me dvesha ragao na me lobha mohao maro naiva me naiva matsariya bhava na dharmo na char to na kamo na moksha chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham na punyam na papam na saukyam na dukyam na mantro na tirtam na vera na yajna aham bhojanam naiva bhojiyam na bhokta chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham na me mrityu shanka na me jati bheda pita naiva me naiva mata na janma na bandhu na mitram guru na eva shishya chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham aham nirvikalpo nirakara rupo vibhu vyapya sarvatra sarvendriyanam sarame samat vaham na muktir na bandha chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham chetananda rupa shivoham shivoham.
We've made our way all the way up to Sahasrara Chakra. Chakra, I don't know if we said this, means wheel or disc. Oftentimes, the different deities, you see them depicted with their different, like, tools that they have, right? Lotus flower, their mace, or their chakra, right? Sahasrara means 1,000, but 1,000, not so much in a literal sense of 1,000, but to imply the infinite. And so each of the chakras has a certain number of lotus flowers or lotus petals associated with it. And Sahasrara has 1,000 lotus petals depicted in its visual depiction. And Sahasrara is sort of the culmination of the work through all the other chakras. And Sahasrara is self-realization, is God realization. It's the space of achieving samadhi or achieving yoga. It's interesting when we look at some of the depictions from different traditions of people who are considered to be enlightened beings. And so these are just some different theories and ideas. But we usually see or often see Jesus depicted with a halo around his head. We often see the Buddha depicted with kind of a hood type of thing around his head. So those are said to possibly be depictions of this idea of God realization showing up in these living entities. Sahasrara is said to be, so I talked a little bit about, so Sushumna is that central channel, considered to be the central channel of life. And we talked about like the staff of Caduceus and the double helix, the snakes going around it, those could be, the staff itself could be considered like the Sushumna, that central channel. So that's a central channel of nerve energy. And Ida and Pingala are the two like secondary main nerve channels. There's a feminine side and a masculine side. Ida is feminine, Pingala is masculine. Moving in a double helix up around Sushumna, said to culminate at the divine eye, at Anya Chakra. So then all of that collective energy, and we also talked about that's where this kundalini energy, so kundalini depicted as potential energy, coiled at the base of the spine through chakra awareness and through our practices and our practices of enlightenment, moving up through the body, said to have, this serpent is said to have pierced all the chakras on its way. So it gets all the way up to the top, and that's when it reaches Shakti energy. And that's this like burst of enlightenment, and then it all goes up and kind of emanates outward into those thousand points or those infinite points. We can think of it as something that we're working with now, for sure, and that's what we'll do our practice around. But we can also think about it as something that we would be looking to actually achieve, right? Because it really is that sense of God realization, self-realization, which is the goal of yoga. And it's said that yoga is both the means and the end. So we practice yoga. We practice this practice of yoga, which can come in many different forms, many different paths, all to realize the same thing, which is yoga, right? Which is union, that yoking of the individual self with the source itself, self-realization and God-realization. But it can also be said, when we go into the whole realm of like really thinking about kundalini energy and really having this kundalini awakening as we move up through the chakras and realize the Sahasrara chakra, that could also potentially be like overwhelming and mind-blowing, right? And so you can look in different like anecdotal experiences, and I've actually had some students. I've had a student come to me with a chronic pain condition that she swears came from a kundalini awakening. So it's also, I guess I'm just saying that to think about that it's also this latent energy, that any kind of like latent energy when it's unhinged can be potentially like dangerous at worst and overwhelming at best. I remember once studying with Richard Miller, and he was even just talking about Kapalabhati breathing. And he was talking about, a little bit more in the kundalini tradition, it's translated or called the breath of fire, right? So it's that really like... And it's a kriya, it's a cleansing practice. And so the more literal translation of Kapalabhati is something like skull shining, right? It's that same thing, that kind of awakening. But Richard Miller talking about, don't do the breath of fire unless you have a lot of practice with that. Just do Kapalabhati, like... And he was saying, because most of us can barely manage the energy that we're aware of right now, and that we're not ready to start like awakening and bringing up all this other energy because we can't even really manage what we have. So I want to kind of put both sides there. Like, we can have a practice around Sahasrara, and we can focus on this idea of this like opening and this thousand points of light just connecting us directly to the divine, and then we can also hold that as really sacred and a really like intense process that we would want to hold very, very cautiously and sacredly. Sahasrara is said to have no sound. It's sound of silence. Said to have no element. Its color is said to be white, which would be a culmination of all of the other colors, right? So all of the other colors converge into this white light. One of my favorite teachers is Joseph LePage, and I remember going through the chakras with him and him talking about Anya Chakra is when we tune into Radio Universe, if you've ever studied, or if you ever study with Joseph, this is the kinds of phraseology that he uses. So like there's like kind of static, it's like a radio station, and when we get to Anya Chakra, it's like we tuned into the station that's coming through loud and clear. But then when we get to Sahasrara Chakra, the universe is meditating through us. Like we're no longer meditating. It's like we're just this vessel. The whole entire universe meditates through us. So that's really the quality of Sahasrara Chakra. It's this culmination of all this other energy, third eye, opening up, God realization. And when we have that God realization, that's when we really come to this place where there is no other, which is why I felt moved to start with the Nirvana Shatakam, because that's the essence of the Nirvana Shatakam, is saying, actually, I'm not any of these things at all. I'm just consciousness itself. Right? So it's that realization of consciousness itself. Sahasrara. It's tricky to say, but kind of fun to say. Why don't you try saying it? Sahasrara.
Sahasrara.
The gland associated with Sahasrara is the pineal gland, which is the gland that, I'm sure among other things, regulates our circadian rhythm. So we can think of it as regulating like our patterns of light and dark.
So it just seems kind of cool to me and kind of makes sense that in that final chakra, like if the Muladhara chakra, that root chakra, starts with an association to the adrenals, that idea of like basic survival, then that the seventh chakra, sort of the ultimate chakra, is governed by or associated with a gland that governs a sense of light and dark, a sense of the known and the unknown, which is really sort of where we're going. We start at that place of making sure that we feel safe and grounded and secure. And from that place, we evolve through the chakras and we end up in a place where it's very easy and comfortable and even part of our very existence to be able to connect directly with all aspects of ourselves, all aspects of our existence, all aspects of the universe, including what we consider light, what we consider dark, and that we can always find our way within even that darkness because we have at that point the grace of God with us. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast. I have met so many people over the past couple of years, and I also want to express this to Emily, who have come to study with me, and I ask them how they know about me, and they say it's because they've been listening to the podcast. So I want to give a shout out to my students in Australia and my students in Germany and then my students all over the U.S. who have met me through the podcast or who have not yet met me in person but maybe are looking forward to doing so because of the podcast. So it's so meaningful to me, and just thank you so much for taking the time to listen.